and welcome to Android Backstage, a brand new, exciting, fun, incredibly long-lived podcast starting today, which is by and for and with and about and to and involving engineers on the Android team. I'm Chet Haas.
And I'm Tor Norby.
And there's a camera that we will look into occasionally, but really this is supposed to be a podcast. It's kind of an audio thing that we wanted to do for a while. But as long as we're sitting at a table talking, maybe we'll put a camera on there for an unknown audience of people that would actually rather watch a podcast instead of listen to it. Also, for the people that are watching this instead of listening, there's a beautiful fake microphone right here. It's beautiful. So the point of the podcast...
It's basically a chance for us to talk about what's happening in Android development.
Yay, we get to talk.
Yeah, and to sit down with our coworkers and ask them about what they're doing. So we think of this as sort of a conversation show. We're not going to be showing anything on our devices. This really, I mostly listen to podcasts. I don't view many podcasts on video. I tend to listen while I'm running or commuting or whatever. And so we thought we'd do that for Android engineers.
So a lot of the information that we have coming out from Google about Android tends to be, you know, more formal articles or tutorials or recently DevByte stuff, and it's all sort of prepackaged. Here's exactly what's going to happen, and that's really good. But it also seemed useful to have a bit more of an unscripted and informal conversation about stuff, a little bit more detailed than maybe you want in an article. But if you're interested in kind of the context, possibly the backstory, or at least more details about particular features, maybe that's why you would tune into the podcast, or because you had nothing else to listen to in the gym and you really hate the soundtrack that they play there. So starting out today, we're going to talk about some of the new KitKat features, because by the time this podcast gets out there, KitKat will be out in the wild. So we thought we'd sort of go through a laundry list of the stuff that is really exciting in that release, some of which we know more about than others. And a lot of this stuff, we're actually going to probably do follow-up shows. So for instance, we'll talk about the new storage APIs. Well, I didn't write it. I don't know all the details about it, but you know what? I sit in the next office to the guy who did. So we'd like to have him come in and talk about the details.
I think before we get into KitKat, though, let's maybe introduce ourselves a bit more to the listeners. Why don't you talk about where you come from?
Well, my parents were born in... I'm Chet Haas. I work on animation and graphics and UI widget stuff. I'm on the toolkit team, which is inside the framework team, which is basically the core platform support for Android. It's where all the APIs and the implementations of those APIs live. Specifically, I've developed some of the new animation capabilities in 3.0 and follow-on stuff there, but anything throughout the view system I've probably tinkered with a little bit, is specifically focusing on some graphics functionality and performance issues. And then the framework team, so I work with all the rest of the people that are working on things like, you know, application lifecycle, or as I mentioned, storage stuff. And that's my team, which is separate from Tor's team, which is?
Developer tools. So I'm a tools guy. I worked on tools my whole career, basically. And so what I'm doing now is I'm working on Android Studio, but I also dabble wherever else is needed. So I wrote Lint, and you know, when I need to work on the Eclipse plugin, I do that.
You wrote Lint, like the tool that was in...
Not the one in C.
C, like 1973?
No, the Android one, which is named Lint as a homage, or homage. If Romain was here, you know, he would correct me, I'm sure. But basically to, you know, honor the long tradition of Lint as a static analysis tool which finds bugs in your code. And that's what Android Lint attempts to do as well. These days, I work on Android Studio, and in particular, you know, the layout rendering, layout editor, editing in general. So I'll talk more about that actually in the KitKat section, because we have some new features coming out to support KitKat.
Cool. And we have lots of stuff that we're going to talk about today. And to be really clear, most of the stuff we had nothing to do with, except we actually get to share space within the building of a bunch of people who worked on that stuff. However, we couldn't crowd all those people into the room at the same time. So we'll go through the stuff now, some of it in more detail than others. And then in future shows, we hope to address some of these things in a bit deeper detail even. Is that about it? I think so. You think that was the intro section? Can I check that off on the list of things we were going to talk about?
This is Chet in manager mode when he makes sure the agenda has been addressed.
Okay, I will take an action item to cross that off the list. Action item completed. So let's go in and talk about KitKat. This is a new release that is coming out anytime now. It's not out yet at the time that we're recording the podcast, but by the time you would be listening to this or watching this, it'll be out there. So you'll be able to go to developer.android.com and look at much more detail on all of this stuff in the reference docs, as well as the overview documentation, as well as a series of Dev Bytes videos that are coming out on a bunch of the different features. So if you hear something, you know, tweaking in your ear today about the stuff that we're talking about, please go to the developer site and get much more information about the actual APIs and the details of using these things.
It's a good thing that's a fake microphone because you keep tapping the table and I'm just so thinking, oh, that's going to be terrible for the audio recording, but I think we're okay.
Actually, the worst thing about the microphone is that I keep addressing myself to the microphone. I'm trying not to look at the camera because no one in the right mind would watch a podcast, but why am I talking to the microphone? It's ridiculous. I should talk to you.
So one thing
I should address myself to your microphone. That's what I should
that's
do.
Good. One thing I don't know if we made clear enough. This podcast, we're intending to be for Android developers. So there's a lot of stuff in KitKat that I think will be of broad interest to anyone using Android. But I think the stuff we're going to focus on is going to be the stuff that's relevant to Android developers. So it's going to be mostly the stuff in the APIs and in the framework support.
Right. So we have done talks on previous occasions in conferences like Google I/O and elsewhere where we'll say, here's what's new in the platform. And these talks always break down between two different fairly orthogonal sections, which is, here's the new stuff that users will notice, like, you know, all the widgets became, you know, glowing green. And then the stuff that's really for developers. And the talks that we do tend to be for both audiences, because whenever there's a new release, you know, it's kind of nice to see what changed for the user experience. And that affects developers somewhat because their apps are going to be shipping as part of that experience. But really, we're more interested in and we'll focus more on the developer aspects, the APIs, the new capabilities that you can take advantage of with your applications.
Frankly, because we know more about it.
True, true. But we're not actually supposed to say that. Can we edit that out? Okay, we'll come back to this section and do some fancy editing there. All right, on to KitKat. Android KitKat. So one of the most exciting things is a concerted effort that's been made on the framework team as well as elsewhere in Android to run better on more constrained devices, specifically devices with a lot less memory. These are still really common in the world. Even though, you know, the devices that maybe we tend to use on a daily basis are much more powerful, the reality is in a lot of places of the world, price is a bigger factor, and these low-end smartphones are coming out, where the later releases of Android had a harder time getting along because there simply wasn't enough memory for all the stuff that was going on there.
Right. So there's a bunch of features they've done in the framework. So there's kernel same page merging, or KSM. I have no idea what that is, but it sounds really good.
Whenever you say the word kernel, I'm pretty
sure kernel. That
is technical and exciting.
Yes, and there's also a swap to ZRAM, and there's some Dalvik JIT code cache tuning that's been done.
I love ZRAM. That's the last RAM. We started with ARAM and then went all the way to Z. So it's got to be good.
Well, it's got, you know, like in graphics, you have the Z buffer, which sort of restores, you know, how deep a point is. This actually is for memory that way. So
right.
They can
so
sort
it's
of
a third dimension of
third
memory.
Dimension
that
memory.
Must be it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's also, I think, better about killing more processes now if it needs to. So in a low memory constrained environment, it might even kill, you know, the input method and things like that if it needs to. And it's also more aggressive, I think, on not swapping back to a cached process if that cached process is using a lot of memory. So there's a bunch of tuning to basically make the phone more responsive.
And there's also some stuff that you can do in your application if you can take advantage of the environment of running on these devices better. For instance, there's a new API. You can inquire whether you are currently running on a low RAM device, activitymanager.isLowRAM device, to see whether you need to adjust the things that you're doing within your application to behave better on that device in that situation. There's also some new tools that we'll get to later that will help track some information about that.
Tools, yay. So we have new support for host card emulation for NFC.
Right, so prior to this, NFC basically depended on a chip, dedicated hardware on the system, So that it was, what was the
chip? I'm not sure if you still need an NFC chip, but you certainly don't need a secure element now. That I think
secure
that
is element is the yeah.
Yes. So now basically any app can emulate an NFC smart card, so that you can initiate transactions and the apps can respond, and you can choose which app you want to handle it.
Right.
So I think it's going to help basically do payments. You know, you can have alternative payment apps and that kind of thing.
Printing is huge. We can now print. So there's a lot of platform capabilities and new APIs you can take advantage of to now opt into the printing ecosystem in your application. You can print enable your application. So you would need to opt into this to say you can actually handle this thing, and then we need to, we being the framework, need to interact with the application to generate the content that can then be printed. So,
well, there's two sides, right? There's the print providers, right? Yeah. So like Google Cloud Print would be one. Right, and you can talk to, I think, other
printers on Wi-Fi.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
There's also the support for an app to say, hey, I want to let the user choose which pages to print, or I want to print this document,
print
or whatever.
Preview. Is there a print preview?
So there's a system UI for printing, which I think gives you sort of a consistent dialogue or whatever it is, you know, across apps. And then your app can do things to create printing. So one thing I thought was really interesting about this is that they are using PDF as sort of the format to talk to printers universally, because I think that's pretty well understood. And apparently, it's very easy now to generate PDFs. Like, you can use the Android drawing APIs, and it will generate PDFs, which I thought was kind of nice.
Right. So you basically get a callback into your application to generate the content that will then be used to send to the printer at the lowest layer. It's going to become a PDF and get sent to the printer in that way. But we will basically call your app. You can call the normal Canvas drawing APIs to produce the content. That gets generated into a PDF, and off we go.
Yeah. I actually print a lot, but not to paper. I tend to print to PDF. So, you know, when I get one of those confirmation dialogues, like, please print this for your records, I'll print PDF and I'll keep it filed, because I don't actually want a piece of paper that I'll lose. Why put it on paper? But actually having sort of a exact record of what it was is kind of nice, as opposed to, you know, saving the HTML page or whatever.
I was thinking, you said, I don't print to paper. I was thinking, like, parchment? Like, do you use stone? Tablets. Tablets would be appropriate. No, I print to tablets.
It's my Norwegian hair. Like, runes, you know, I want to basically scratch it on stones. So I need a robot arm to do, like an Android robot, to scratch it onto the surface of a rock or something.
Let's see. Storage. Storage is exciting. So this is new APIs and capabilities for basically a unified mechanism for people to interact with documents on the system. And instead of trying to figure out how to interact with, you know, particular parts of storage, I want to store this locally, I want to go out to the cloud, I have my own partition to store stuff in. This is a unified system for you to interact with the global storage mechanisms of the device. There are new capabilities in Drive as well as local storage, where they advertise themselves as such.
And you use a single API, right? So whether that's going to local storage or Google Drive or whatever API is implementing the service, that's transparent to you as an app developer.
Right. And then you can create your own document provider if you want to opt into the system.
This reminds me of the way IDEs tend to work. So they often create a file system abstraction.
Yeah.
And that's how an IDE lets you open an editor. And you can sort of get syntax highlighting and edit that file, whether it's local or inside a jar file. Sometimes even in, you know, behind an FTP front end, because the IDEs tend to always, like, not access files directly, but through some abstraction. Every IDE I've worked on has had this.
And now Android does too.
Yeah, it's very nice, because your app can basically just not deal with that. Supporting remote files is no harder than supporting local files.
So this is kind of a huge and exciting area, and I anticipate an upcoming podcast where we'll actually talk to the guy that was behind a lot of the stuff. So we'll go into much more detail at that time.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Sensors. So sensors are responsible for some of the power issues sometimes, because they can wake the system up or keep it awake when you didn't really need that information at that time, just because they like to detect, you know, motion that's going on or other sensor information in the system. There's new capability where we can now batch these requests for information that you didn't need it to know actually right now, but maybe you could do it, you know, at some later time, sometime soon. These things can get batched together, which means that the sensor didn't need to wake up the system or keep the system awake as much as it previously did, and it's a great power savings.
I think one of the really promising uses of this is the step counter. right? So what it does is it can detect, you know, the motion of your device and detect that you are walking or running or whatever, but it's not constantly doing that. I think it's somehow just batching all those events up and then later doing processing on them.
Right.
And so this is really great for activity trackers.
Right.
So I've been using an app lately. So I used to, when I would go for a run, I would, you know, you get to the beginning of the trailhead and you start recording, right? I'm going to run now. And then I run. When I get back to the car, I forget to turn it off. And so I'm driving down the road after running, and it says, and it, you know, 5 miles.
Slow down.
No, it's like it's still recording because I forgot to stop it. And then sort of the data is all spoiled because, you know, you forgot to stop the thing. Whereas this, you know, these activity trackers that are just sort of always running, they can tell the difference between walking and running. And so they know when to stop. Like, okay, you stop moving at this point. Now you're running. Now you're driving, that kind of thing.
Actually, it's really great power savings for the step detection, specifically for the engineering community, because we basically just sit at our desks all day.
Yes.
There's
zero
no
steps today.
Yeah.
Try again tomorrow.
So it's really efficient for that.
Yeah.
This depends on some new capabilities. So the new step detector stuff, which is, you know, sort of it's baked into the system now. You don't have to come up with your own interaction with sensors to have your own algorithms about step detection and step counts. You can actually use the system that we have. But that that new capability, as well as the sensor batching capability, is somewhat dependent on the hardware. It's in the Nexus 5, and we're working with other vendors to get it into other devices.
Yeah, so I've been leaving it on all day long, and it's great. No, I can't tell any battery impact.
Zero steps.
Right.
All day. SMS provider. If you do SMS, you can work with a new system-wide SMS provider that we have. Instead of, I mean, it's like the step thing. You don't need to reinvent this stuff. You can instead build on platform capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like it's a common theme here, right? Is that there's many, there's print provider,
yep,
there's storage provider, there's SMS provider. Sort of having a centralized API where, you know, you have the provider part and you have the client part talking together.
Right. Wouldn't it be nice if everybody didn't have to reinvent all of these things just to get their application off the ground?
Yes.
Immersive mode. So I was talking to someone on the system UI team just this morning to make sure I understood this correctly. So we already have this to some extent. If you have a full screen application, let's say you want to play a video or you want to play, you have a game, you want it to be a full screen experience. That's all really good, except the prior experience that we had was, okay, we will allow you to pop the system, the navigation and status bar out of the way so that you can have an immersive experience, but as soon as the user taps on it, those bars come back in. And the reason was reasonable, which is the user needs to be able to navigate, right? They need to be able to get out of your game, no matter how fantastic your game is. Maybe the user actually wanted to do something else with their tablet. So the bars would come back in so that they could navigate out, and then you would need to push them back out of the way again to, you know, go back to your video or whatever. The idea with immersive mode, which is new in KitKat, is that the bars will stay out of the way. The first time they do this, there will be some indication on the screen so that the user understands what's going on and how to get out of that situation, which is basically swipe down from the top, or more generally swipe from the direction that the thing got hid to. So if it went away to the right, you can swipe back from the right. You can always swipe down from the top because that's where the status bar lives permanently. And this will bring the bars back in, and then the user can do the navigation that they want. So you get the full-on immersive mode that you wanted, and the user still gets to navigate away when they need to.
Right, so I've been actually on my KitKat phone playing Candy Crush. You know, and it's full screen. But if I ever want to know, hey, is there mail? I just swipe down from the top. I can see, no mail. So it's sort of a good way to, I wonder if that is immersive mode, or if that's just something we've always had. But I think that, because it looks like it's a new thing because it has a translucent notification bar sitting on top of the game.
So that's actually, it's a really issue, but I did want to point out that Candy Crush specifically, I think I call that frustrating mode. I recently gave up on that game because it became so addictive and so horrible to sit on the same level for weeks. So that just brings in, I don't want to get into it now, but all right.
You know, there are support groups for this. Not to get further, but to get past it. You should just do what I do, which is that, you know, I keep wiping my phone. So I keep going, I keep doing the low levels over and over. I think I go up to about 50 or so. And
I think that's about the right level. It gets really frustrating after that. Okay, so moving on. So the translucent bars that Tora was talking about, they're related. because that's the same content that we're talking about moving out of the way. But actually, it's a bit more of a user feature that developers can opt into. If you run KitKat on the Nexus 5, you'll see the translucent bars on Launcher. So you'll see it on the home screen. You can see through to the wallpaper behind the status bar and the navigation bar. If you want that capability in your own application, if you want your content to go wider and to have those bars sitting on top and be able to see through them, then you can opt into it with new API as well.
It looks nice. I think that what I'm seeing with the game, and I think I see this in Google Books as well, it's kind of nice because you actually have to, I mean, it's out of the way, but you can slide in and then it's sort of sitting translucently on top of your content, but you can sort of see whether there's any notification.
Translucency. Alpha. Yeah. Alpha is cool. Transitions. So this is... Do you want to talk about transitions?
Well, you know, I've been working a lot on this, so let me share some of my experience. Actually, no, I'm going to defer to you.
So transitions is basically what I spent a lot of my time for the last several months working on. It is... How to describe it? It is a way to help your users understand the flow in your application. It's a way to use animations to help bring your users along in the experience of your application. Transitioning or segueing, which is an incredibly awkward word to spell or to say, transitioning from one scene to another. So let's say you have one scene, you know, it's a layout file that describes what your UI looks like. It's some form where they enter information, click a submit button, then you go to another form that shares some UI elements with a previous screen, but also has some additional elements and some other elements went away. You could run an animation, you could run several animations that fade things out, that fade things in, things slide in from the right, and other things, you know, change size and location on the screen. You can do all of that today, but it tends to be a very manual process. What transitions do is automate that process and give you an easy way to say, I would like you to run a transition on all the changes that are about to take place. Then you make the changes in your UI. The transition system figures out where things were, where things are, and then runs animations automatically. And then there's other APIs where you can customize that behavior. Well, when something comes in, I want you to run the following animator. When something goes away, I want you to run this other animator. When something changes size, do this. You can have new transition effects. Let's say you want a rotate effect, so you can listen for changes
I see so much potential for abuse here. You know, like when someone first gets the hold of like a video editing package and every transition is like cross wipe with like a scroll and a double fade and...
Yeah, we want to give you as many capabilities for screwing up your users as possible.
It's probably better to maybe use this API because hopefully you're doing something nice and subtle as opposed to users picking, I want a rotate animation and I want you to go 720 degrees.
I hope so. So I think the 99% use case is basically opt into transitions and we'll do something simple and automatic for you. And that's all. There's basically a one-line use case that I would expect most people to use. And then if you want to customize it, then there's other APIs to do that. Another way to think of this, if you want even more details, which I would, being an animation person, is there's a trick that I've used in a lot of the DevBytes episodes and some of the I/O talks on animations where you can basically query the current state of your UI, then you make changes which will force a layout, and you add yourself as an on pre-draw listener. And then when you get the callback into that on pre-draw listener, you can figure out where things got to after layout ran, and then you can figure out the deltas and run your animation. So I've done this in various demos. You can see tutorials on how to do this. Transitions is basically a way to do that in a much simpler way. You don't need to add the pre-draw listener. That's kind of the implementation detail of how transition works, but it does it all for you. So it's a much more automatic approach to it.
Now, I assume that some of these features, like the translucent bars, I assume that's a flag they set somewhere, and they can add it to their apps now, I'm assuming, and it'll work on KitKat, but you know, on older platforms, it'll just not happen. Now, transitions, is that something they can add to their apps, or does that like force users to go to MinSDK version 19?
It would be a MinSDK version because it is new API in the platform as of KitKat.
Right. I see.
So you can still take the old approach of on pre-draw listeners or more manual animators, or you can just have a degraded experience on earlier releases. It's the same trade-off for other new platform capabilities. But yeah, it's new API.
Okay.
Okay, that's probably enough talk about transitions. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we have to stop Chet because this is one of his hobby horses. So there's a new brand new implementation of WebView. So I think the old WebView was a bit dated. I think it was the old implementation, the Android implementation of a HTML renderer. And as I understand it, in KitKat, they have replaced it with something based on Chromium. So you have, you know, full HTML5 support, CSS3, JavaScript, the V8 engine, super performant.
And so guaranteed to be sort of up to date because it's the same shared source for stuff that they're using in Chrome itself.
Yes. And I think there's some developer option where you can switch, I guess, in case there's some compatibility things they're still investigating. I think I read that somewhere. So you can switch in developer options, but I think it's on by default now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. There's some enhancements to notifications, so you can get more information through the listener service if you want to change the way things are displayed or simply get more information about what's going on. There's a lot of little things in the area, well, no, they're not all little, in the area of media.
Well, so, you know, the first thing is tools stuff, so I'm very excited about this. Right, so one feature that is now available is the ability to record your screen.
Yes!
Yes.
Awesome.
I know, so if you've ever wanted to record your app and send a video, you can go on YouTube and see a lot of awkward screen recordings where people are holding one phone and there you can see their hand in the picture as they're filming themselves using their app. Now you have a better option. That is basically to run the screen recording feature, which we haven't talked about Studio 032 yet, but we are about to release. But when you hear this, we probably have already released Studio 032, which actually has UI support for this. But you can also use the ADB command. And when you run this, it basically starts recording a movie of what you're doing on your device. I think it's in full resolution if it can.
Yep.
And it stores it as an MP4 file on your device, which you can then pull off, which you know the Studio support does for you automatically.
Yep.
So this is a really good way to record a walkthrough of your app. And then you can upload that and add voiceover and whatever else you want. Maybe some WYSI rotation effects and crossfades.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If nothing else, it's a fantastic debugging tool. But I think it has uses beyond that, like doing a screen record of how to use your app or whatever. I've used it for a bunch of debugging stuff. It's really nice to have the actual frames output into video that you can then step through and see what was going on. As opposed to, the other approach I've used is using
Expensive camera that was mounted over the device.
Yeah. And then you're filming the device and you got reflections off the screen and there's always a mismatch between the rate that it's being filmed at and the rate that you're actually updating the frames on the device. So this way you actually get the frame that was produced. An important thing to note is I was using this in one debugging situation and assuming that the frames on the device corresponded to the frames in the video. And there is some mismatch there, so I wouldn't count on the exact timings of things if you're stepping frame by frame. But the actual frames that you get there are for sure the frames that changed on the device. So very cool. ADB shell, screen record, and then the location of the MP4 file you're going to put in.
More importantly, use the tools.
Use the tools. Yeah. Use all the tools
use
all
Studio.
The time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Resolution switching. There is the ability now through some standard whose acronym I forget to do adaptive playback and switch resolution on the fly. If that's something you want to
know. Well, I think that if you're doing a streaming app, something like Netflix or whatever, this is really useful, right? So that you can, if the user's bandwidth is going down, you can, or actually if it's better than you think it's going to be, you can adaptively start feeding the decoder higher resolution frames and the player will now just, seamlessly start showing those high resolution frames. So I think it will make a lot of playback apps work better for, streaming.
Speaking of streaming, better DRM supports. There's common encryption for Dash. Dash is all caps, so it must be an acronym meaning something terribly important. Multi-platform DRM solution. So hopefully that makes the platform even more DRM happy. HTTP live streaming, which we supported already. There's an update to go to version 7, which is, I guess, important for people who weren't happy with version 6.
I think we can probably confess to our listeners that we don't know what we're talking about now. We're just reading off of...
I don't know what Tor's talking about anyway. There are certain elements here of which I know less than others.
Well, the next one actually I'm excited about because this is audio tunneling to DSP. So it's basically offloading the effects processing of audio to the digital signals processor. And so on the Nexus 5, you can get 60 hours of playback with this, because it's basically leaving the, you know, assuming your screen is off, of course. I'm talking if you just have audio playback. It's kind of nice that you can have listening to music or podcast or whatever, and it's really obviously not impacting your battery very much, given that you can go 60 hours. I mean,
that
at
is
that
like
point,
2.5 days of
your
ears
bleeding. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, of this podcast on repeat. You know, if you're really conscientious and you want to learn about KitKat, 60 hours of this over and over, and you know.
Wow, that's a lot. Okay. Yeah, certainly check that out. That is, it's dependent on some hardware or possibly driver capability. So it's on the Nexus 5 for now.
You need DSP for sure.
Right.
You know.
Right. So yes, working with chip vendors, manufacturers on other device support. Audio monitoring, so you can find out more information about what's actually going on in the audio system, so you can make adjustments in whatever you're doing, if you want to display the audio as some sort of screen effect or whatever.
Well, there's like a pretty big market for wallpapers, right? There's a lot of there's a lot of people who like to, I mean, there's a lot of those for sale. So maybe music visualizer is just a new thing.
Right.
I remember in the old days, you know, people would have, you know, when you used to play music on your laptop, remember that? There would be all these like really cool visualization effects that would run. So maybe people could do cooler ones with that.
I don't know.
So I, you know, I have something here about a loudness enhancer, and so there's some sort of built-in support for doing on-the-fly compression. I don't mean compression in the, you know, bit compression sense that we're usually talking about, but the audio compression. You know, when you do something with the waveforms to make them more compact, so it sounds better. So they have something that's optimized for speech to basically help you do that efficiently.
Okay. Also, in audio, we have timestamps, which should make it easier to synchronize content. And finally, for media, we are now Wi-Fi certified for Miracast. So we already offered Wi-Fi remote display anyway, but now we're actually certified. I don't know how big a tweak that is, or if it was mainly a certification process.
Well, no, apparently there's a bunch of new options under developer options to tweak all the Miracast settings. So this is, you know, if you want to make your device work, you know, with, or if you want to get it certified for Miracast, you can go in here and you can tweak it and debug it, apparently.
If you want to make your app, not your device.
Well, no, I assume it's your device, because I don't think that this is something you do per app, I think.
Okay.
Actually, I don't know. Obviously, don't know what I'm talking about here. Miracast.
Certified.
Yeah.
All right. In the graphics area, we have some major improvements to RenderScript. So there's always performance improvements going on. It's kind of a general framework theme anyway. But the RenderScript team has been working hard on various performance improvements, including GPU acceleration on other platforms. So this is something that tends to be per device, because we need some support at the driver level from the chip manufacturers. But certainly in the Nexus family, we have a broad range of support. So Nexus 4, Nexus 5, which is new, the Nexus 7, the second version, which came out in 2013, and the Nexus 10, all have GPU support for RenderScript. So prior to this, RenderScript ran all on the CPU, and it could take advantage of multi-core, so it could do some really fast multi-threaded stuff, and it was all very, very cleverly optimized software to begin with. So there was already performance improvements or performance advantages for RenderScript for like image processing computations and stuff. But now they can also offload to the GPU when appropriate, so they can take advantage of not only multiple cores on the CPU, but also this other core that you have sitting on the GPU to do things that it is more tuned to do. So all good stuff. Also, RenderScript is available from the NDK. So if your application uses NDK, you can now start using some of the capabilities of RenderScript as well.
So that means that you don't have to put a lot of, even if you already have a lot of hardware-specific code in your NDK, for the graphics part, you don't have to worry about different chipsets.
Right.
I mean, it's still an advantage to say, hey, this is just the render code.
Right.
Please do this most efficiently on whatever GPU you have available.
And again, more algorithms that maybe you don't have to invent. If we do really clever optimizations for image processing, hey, take advantage of it. Surface Flinger, sort of low-level graphic stuff, partly responsible for actually putting the bits on the screen, is upgraded to work with GLES2, OpenGLES2. And this is a help for both functionality as well as performance. And connectivity. There's a bunch of Bluetooth. This is actually my favorite feature on the entire laundry list because of all the acronyms. It's Bluetooth HID. It's, well, I'll just read it. It's HID over GAT, which is H-O-G-P. So it's HID over G-A-T-T. And those two acronyms weren't enough. So what they needed to do was actually condense those into one single algorithm means both of them, and that's HOGP, HID over GAT. What's P for? Maybe the P is silent like pneumonia.
Could be. This is apparently low latency links to mice and joysticks.
Right.
And
yeah. So peripherals, you want low latency, you want something really fast. So new standard we're taking advantage of. Go for it.
We're also supporting Bluetooth Map, which is you can exchange messages with a nearby device, such as an automotive terminal or some other, you know, cell phone.
IR blasters, so you can do remote apps.
I was hoping that IR, you know, the IR thing would just die.
Because?
No, because, and it's just very personal, but, you know, like at home I have remote controls and I hate them so much. I'm you know, whenever the battery gets low, they get less effective. So you have to push the button and the channel won't change. And you compare that to like a controller for a game console, which is instant. That's what I want. I want my TV to respond instantly. The minute I say on, you go on. You don't take a half a second to respond. That's probably not fair to like blame all IR on my personal experience with my 10-year-old equipment, but I still just feel like this just can't be state of the art. I mean, what is the latency on that thing?
So IR blasters, bringing Tor's hang up with remotes to the Android
I'm not doing a very good job selling this as an awesome feature, but no. But I think the good news here is that people do have this hardware in their houses, right? So this is a very important thing to support. And this basically lets you build a remote app, for example, in a very standard way that'll work on different devices. You don't have to worry about specific vendor-specific hardware, right? This is sort of letting you use a single API to say, hey, IR Blaster, please wake up the TV.
We also support Wi-Fi TDLS, which is the ability to stream to other devices that are on the same Wi-Fi network. I wonder if that, does that hook
Chromecast?
Into, yeah, I was just wondering the same thing. Does it hook into, was that required functionality for Chromecast where it can do like auto detection of these other devices that happen to be on the same network?
It could be. I mean, you know, I do have a Chromecast app on my pre-KitKat phone, so I mean, clearly it's not a requirement, but maybe, it's, yeah, here we're speculating.
Plugs into that system. We should ask someone that knows more about it than we do.
Actually, I think it'd be really great to have someone talk about Chromecast on this podcast, so let's make a informal promise to
I'm going to add an action item.
Yeah, action item. Excellent.
All right. Accessibility. So there was already a way to do closed captioning, but you sort of had to set it on, like per application, you had to ask the user what they wanted to do. We now have system-wide closed captioning preferences, which you can query from your application. So the user sets it up, and then you just query, figure out what level of support that they want, and then you support that in your application.
I'm really excited about that because, you know, when my kids were really young, I got in the habit of having subtitles on. Even, you know, even when it's in English, I still want the subtitles because sometimes there's someone talking, and you sort of, it's great to be able to not miss it.
Norwegian subtitles?
I actually had English subtitles on an English show.
Your English is really good. I'd like to point that out, actually. I think you're doing very well.
Thank you. So I got in the habit of that, and so I still like it. I even turn it on now. The problem is that I've noticed on my Android phone, there's different subtitling styles for different apps. So it's clearly implemented separately, you know, in the Netflix app versus the Google Play Movies app and all that. And I think so having it use a common system UI where I can make font preference choices and all that stuff, definitely a good improvement.
Video View has new API for captions, so you can supply captions as part of the stream for Video View. And finally, there's enhanced accessibility APIs, so you can give the system more information about the structure, the semantic structure of the on-screen elements to provide more information to the user.
So we have we got right-to-left support, I think, maybe in 4.3. I'm not 100% sure exactly when it arrived, but there's further enhancements in KitKat. So one of the things you can do here is that you can tell the system to auto-mirror your drawables. Because sometimes, you know, you have to reverse your images for left to right, and so you have to duplicate all your drawables to put one in the right to left locale and one in the left to right locale. And that basically bloats your APK, because your drawables tend to be one of the largest assets you have. And so now there's this ability to say, hey, you know, just mirror this one automatically. I think it'll just do like a bit for bit flip. And in some cases you can say, hey, this, I don't want you to mirror this. You know, it might be a picture of a face. And you know, you can say this is the same for both.
So you can tell the system my drawables go both ways.
Right.
There's also a pseudo locale, which is developer option, so it makes it easier to test how your application is going to behave in locale-specific environments.
Yeah, I when I used to work at the on the Sun IDE for C development, we had Xe Max integrated, and I used to run Xe Max in the Japanese locale, and that was in order to see, you know, if we had missed something. And so I basically knew the IDE, I knew key bindings, and I could sort of navigate the menus by sort of, you know, the fourth item should be do this. And sometimes you'd see an English string go, oh, we forgot to localize that one. But I do remember one, the disadvantage with that is I don't actually read or even speak Japanese, right? And I remember once there was this bug, and someone from the Japanese localization center filed and said, hey, this string, you know, is garbage. And I looked at it like, you know, I can't tell the difference. You know, apparently the symbols were all wrong. So they to bring this back to what we're talking about, pseudo locale is great because it's basically you can see your app in English. So you don't, you know, if you don't speak other languages, you can still be okay with this locale. You don't have to go to one of the right to left languages in order to make sure that your layouts, your custom views are doing the right thing. So you switch to this right to left pseudo locale, everything will align to the right, but it still is going to be readable to you, I believe.
So does this plug into the tools at all? Is there, because you have locale support.
We do.
To some extent in Android Studio, right?
Yes, we do. So what you do in Studio, and in fact, we've been talking about adding something like this as well, where you can force your layout to do right to left, even if your locale is not right to left. This is slightly different, but we offer that as well.
Security. So SE Linux, we have changed the, what do they call it, the secure mode? I'm not sure what the terminology is. It used to be permissive. Which is an odd name for
permissive security. Sounds kind
to
of fishy.
Enforcing, so more security on the system.
Also, I heard somewhere that more security is better.
Heard
you
that
want
too.
A higher number is better for security.
Yeah, technical detail, more security, better.
Yeah.
Improved cryptographic algorithm, so more secure signing for apps and content, and also per user VPN. So now that we have the ability to have multi user, which came out in was that a Jelly Bean 4.2?
I think so. Yes, I think that it was for tablets in Jelly Bean.
I think it's still for tablets.
Could be, yeah.
So there's the ability to have multiple users on the system. You kind of want to segment the capabilities of those users. So VPN is now per user. So that's all good. Memory, this is huge. So this actually relates to what we were talking about before with the ability to run on lower end devices. Maybe there's only 512 megabytes on the system. You want to make sure that the system and all the applications run well anyway. Part of what we did to do that was to enhance the tools that we used internally and now exposed to you externally so that you can get more information on what's actually going on in the system and in your application. One of those new tools is Procstat. This is a command line tool. It's one of the ADB shell tools. So you would run ADB shell dump sys procstat, and you can get lots and lots of information about what's going on in the system for all the processes. Proc is actually an abbreviation for process. I learned that. I should also mention meminfo here. This is another ADB shell tool. So you would say ADB shell dump sys meminfo, and then you can get meminfo on everything or specialize it to constrain it to your particular activity and get information about the memory snapshot of that activity at that time. And we've enhanced the data in there so you get a little bit more information about, okay, what's going on in the GPU as well for the textures that are allocated. You want to know, especially for memory constrained devices or applications that require a lot of memory and maybe you're, you know, running out occasionally and you'd like to know where that memory is going or how much it's using or how it's interacting with the system overall. And so all of these tools are trying to give you more information. It's also probably worth making a call out to J Hat. I forget the actual tools that people are running. An example is a tool called Mat in Eclipse that you can run. You can basically get an HPROF that you can convert into a format that Mat can read and give you information about leaks. It's incredibly helpful. I've used this a few times in this release. In fact, I was just using it yesterday to track down not only where is the memory being allocated in your application, but why is it not going away?
Well, you know, I had not expected that in this KitKat discussion, you would be the one to derail it into a tools discussion. That's
great. You know what? I'm trying to casually segue into the next section, which is coming up. And we're almost there, so just hold on to it for a couple more seconds. And then finally, there's a developer option called Process Stats, which is how to get more runtime information on the device itself. So go into Settings, Developer Options, Process Stats, and you can get even more information about your process there. And now we have a special segment on this first show called Tools.
All right. So with the KitKat SDK release, we are also releasing a bunch of new tools. And so in Android Studio, in 0.3.2, we have support for a lot of the Java 7 JDK language features. So you can now actually use the diamond operator, which you know lets you, if you have like a list of maps of strings as your variable and you're typing new, you have to repeat all that. With the diamond operator, you just basically put the, you know, less than, greater than signs, and it just knows to fill it in.
Which is awesome, but when you said diamond operator, I was thinking, oh, is that like the blue steel?
Right.
Of the Java language world.
Right, so you can use that. You can use strings and switches. You can use numeric literals. So if you ever find yourself wanting to put like a binary literal, you know, zero ones and zeros, you can put 0b, you know, as a prefix of the number, in addition to 0x for hex. There's multi-catch. That's probably the one people are most excited about, right? So you have a case where you have a try and you want to catch something and you want to do the same thing for all these different signature types. Well, we all cheat and just catch exception sometimes, right? Especially in unit tests. But now you're allowed to actually put the specific different exception types, just separated with vertical bars, and then you can have a single body where you can reference the type with sort of, I guess, the methods that are common to all of them. So these features are all supported now with the KitKat Dex tool. And so we have support for this in Studio. So when you create a new project, we're asking you which language level do you want, and you can choose between 6 and 7. And if you choose 7, you can basically, we will create a Gradle project that says, hey, I want the JDK 7 language source mode. And then when we compile, we invoke it with the right stuff. And the really nice thing about Dex and KitKat is that it supports all these features, not just for KitKat, but basically going all the way back to Froyo. So you don't have to say, hey, I can't use these features because I'm only supporting, you know, I need to support API 8 or 11 or whatever. You can use them all except for one. Try with resources. That's the one where you have a try statement and, you know, instead of just the open brace, you actually put a parenthesis and a variable assignment. And so you do, for example, try, parenthesis, you know, reader, my reader equals, and some method to like create that reader. And it, when that try block is finished, it'll automatically close it for you. That's the whole point of try with resources.
So you no longer need the finally block for all the stuff.
Yeah, finally is not required, but more importantly, you don't have to declare the thing outside the try block and then null check it inside and then re-catch the exception. All that ugly stuff goes away. You basically create the variable and it gets auto-closed. And that's precisely the reason why this requires KitKat, is that that relies on this interface called auto-closable that Closable will actually extend, but all these other places too. All these APIs you want to use require this class, you know, to be available in the runtime, and that that requires KitKat. But everything else, you know, strings and switches, numeric literals, multi-catch, all that stuff, you can take advantage.
Yeah.
So that's kind of nice.
Also, your bit about dexing reminded me there is new runtime technology that we're working on, a new experimental technology which is referred to as ART.
Right.
So in developer options, you can select to run with the new runtime. The default is still Dalvik, as it always was, but you can choose ART instead if you want to try your application with the new runtime. There will be much more information about ART soon, maybe by the time this is out, or certainly rolling out over time.
Right. So the point of ART is supposed to be, I think, better GC behavior, better performance. But apparently it can still have bugs. So, you know, I spoke to some of the engineers and they're saying, well, you know, try it and file bugs if you see anything. Yep. So
okay.
It's kind of interesting. We have a few more things we've done in the tools to support KitKat.
Yeah.
So there's screen record, which I mentioned earlier. That's an ADB command for those people who like to do that. But you can just open the DDMS window in Studio and there's like, we already have had a screen capture button there where, you know, we grab a screenshot and we let you also insert device art around it. You know, we put an app, you can choose a phone to put around it, and then sort of you get like a nice screenshot with a nice glare. Well, now there's a new icon for doing a movie recording, and then once it's done, it'll pull the device locally and let you save it. So that's kind of nice. There's a new class that is called ArrayMap that's in the SDK.
Awesome.
So ArrayMap is supposed to be a replacement for HashMap. So it's supposed to be much better for, I think, better memory behavior when you don't think the map is going to be large. It's sort of right. like our sparse lists and things we've had like that before. And so it avoids creating a separate entry object for each thing you put in. Because when you create a hash map, you know, there's the data you put in, but it also will create all this bookkeeping data in addition to each item you put in. This one avoids all that.
So yeah, not a, I wouldn't say replacement, because I think it's still appropriate right. to use hash map in some situations.
Yes.
But it is something that you can swap in for any hash map that you have. Basically, the API, doesn't it? It maps to it?
You can.
Maps. Well, get what? It maps to it, huh?
Excellent pun. gold star. So one of the complications was that it's not exactly a collection. Yeah. So you know, when you try to debug, what it does to be very performant is that it reuses the same object as you're iterating. And that was really, really bad for the debugger when you want to actually see these items. So we have created special visualizers in the Studio Debugger so that it will actually go and present. So you can actually drill into these data structures anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is one of the things that we've done for a remap.
Okay. Tools.
Well, so we have a few non-KitKat related things in 0.3.2 as well. You can now, as you're editing your drawable XML files, you actually get a render on the right. So one of the features we've had in Studio is the layout preview on the right. So as you're editing your XML, you get to see a rendering on the right as if you were in the layout editor, right? And as you click in the rendering, it'll select the corresponding thing in the text editor and so forth. So what we're doing now is we're adding support for more XML types. So if you edit, you know, drawable XML, you can see how the gradients are looking. If you're editing a menu file, you get a representative rendering of what that menu will look like. So you'll actually see the menu with all the items. It should do the same sorting as it'll happen on the real device. You can see if you have icons, it'll look like an action bar. So it makes it a lot easier to edit your menu XML files. Same thing for layout widget files. We give you rendering those as well. And so going further, we plan to also give you, for example, a preview rendering of your preference file so you can see what your preferences look like and so forth. So it's kind of a useful way to let you see, you know, what the strings are and how they look and how the sorting ends up and all that. I think that's all, basically.
There's... And that's it. Just, what have you been doing the last several months?
Yeah, no, it's... We have had a canary channel for Studio, which is sort of, you know, daily builds basically with very little testing. We've added the other channels, you know, I think dev channel, beta, and stable. There's nothing in beta or stable yet, but we now have a build in developer channel. So people who want to be slightly more conservative can still start getting Studio updates now.
When he says canary, it's a term I've heard tossed around, which is basically you can be an internal user of these things, sort of live on the bleeding edge. Or you could go a little bit further and use canary, the term meaning, of course, the bird that was sent into the mine to detect when there was a gas leak and die.
I know, the historical connotation is a bit bad. Like, yeah, you know, please...
please kill yourself on the following.
When we see you die with this build, we will pull back. That's not how we mean it. We do actually do some testing, but...
Not many users have died on these latest builds internally.
Yeah, the statistics are pretty good as far as I know.
Yeah, acceptable collateral damage.
Yeah.
I think that wraps up what we planned to talk about today. What would you guys like to hear about? Can't hear them. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess we're done.
We'll be back with hopefully some interviews.
Yeah, tune in next time for an as-yet-unannounced agenda. I would expect we'll be interviewing one or more people who have worked on some of the features that we talked about today.
Hope you enjoy KitKat.
Enjoy your dessert. All right.
It's a bit derivative.
Bye.